We're all full of lies. Mama, we're meant for the flies. And right now they're building a coffin your size. Mama, we're all full of lies. Well, mother was the warden to my legs and to my tongue. You should have raised a baby girl. I should have been a better son. If you could count on the infection, naked, amputated ones, you should have been. I could have been a better son. And when we can real play,
Chapter 22. I flew ahead to the appointed rendezvous. I passed over Visser 1 on the way. She was still moving quickly up the hill. Had she heard the explosion? Did she feel the fear eating at her? The fear that death was coming up behind her? Or was she filled with anticipation? Was she giddy and energized with the thought of killing our foe, of annihilating the Freehork Bajir, of living to dance on Visser 3's grave? I pulled far ahead. I headed for the clearing halfway up the mountain. There was a cluster of lean-tos for campers on the edge of the clearing. Axe, using his morphing ability, should already have frightened them from the area. We didn't want innocents caught in the crossfire. We didn't want bystanders hurt. That was our plan. Tell that to the ranger back there, Marco, I said to myself. Tell that to his family. No innocent bystanders in our little war. No place for them, is there? No time to think about the damage you do with our bright, clear line. A campfire smoldered below. In one of the shelters, two sleeping bags were spread over bunk beds. Two backpacks sat propped against the wall. These nature lovers had left in a hurry. Axe at work. Maybe. Or maybe Visser 3's forces had come in from this direction as well. More innocents. Dead or merely terrified. We'd chosen Wildwood Trail specifically because it wasn't popular. It wasn't very scenic. It wouldn't be wall-to-wall crunchies working out in their timberlands. And because, a mile or so up, we could cut away from the trail and go cross-country through terrain that would thin out the pursuit. I spotted Visser 1 laboring up the slope, fighting the gravity I could easily defy. Her pretty face was dripping sweat. Her lungs gasped. That was the plan, too. Too rushed, too scared, too tired to think. And yet, she already knew too much. She'd figured out what Visser 3 had not. It was weird. Perverse, maybe. But I was proud of her. As if it had been my mother, not the yerk in her head, who had penetrated our deepest secret. I caught an updraft and soared high into the air. Up into the clean, clear air. I wanted to keep flying. Just catch a breeze and sail away and leave it all behind. But how could I? How could I, with the possibility of Jake and Cassie being dead? No, no, Marco, I sneered. Far better they should die to bring about more death. Yes, that would give their lives meaning. I rose high and searched the trail ahead, but not even Osprey eyes could penetrate the dense foliage. I did not spot Axe, or Tobias, or Rachel. Below, far back down at the trailhead, Visser 3 was still in his human morph. He was moving swiftly up the trail. A dozen armed men before, a dozen more behind him. But one man was out in front, all alone, moving very fast. He wore a camouflage jacket and blue jeans. A camouflage stocking cap was pulled down, hiding most of his red hair. The way he was moving, he was either an athlete or a very experienced woodsman. He left the trail and went cross-country. Either going ahead to take a shot at Visser 1, or going ahead to spy out what was happening. I'd have to watch Red Hair. He made me nervous. I knew that what I saw was not even the thin edge of Visser 3's true forces. I knew that the sky above me was dotted with shielded bug fighters, and maybe the blade ship as well. Not to mention any of Visser 1's loyal troops. The killing had only taken a rest break. It would start again once Visser 3 was sure of Visser 1's goal. Once all her forces were in the open and committed. Once he was sure of victory. I circled back to the campsite. Visser 1 had been instructed to wait there. I floated down, skimming in, hidden from the Visser's sight. I landed in the middle branches of a tall pine. Only then did I see the goblin form of a Hork-Bajir standing perfectly still. So still, it could have been a statue. "Rachel? Tobias?" I called.
"Rachel," she answered. "Haven't seen Tobias yet."
"I'm here,"
a thought-speak voice answered.
"Right above you, Marco."
I jerked my head upward. The 7-foot-tall, bladed form rested comfortably another 20 feet up the trunk.
"You guys forget. Hork-Bajir are arboreal. Why be on the ground when you can have some altitude?"
"Where are Jake and Cassie?"
Rachel asked. I didn't answer. I couldn't.
"Marco?"
Rachel pressed. I couldn't. Couldn't say it.
"Marco!"
"Visor 3! He got them!"
"What?"
Tobias cried.
"Captured?"
"No. No, I don't think so."
Chapter 23. We waited. Silent. Dangerous. I know Rachel. I know she wanted action, not play acting. I knew she would explode at the slightest provocation. I know Tobias. I knew that in the face of so much sadness, he would retreat from his human side. I knew that he was more hawk now than ever, despite his Hork-Bajir form. And what could I say to them? What could I say to lead them, or control them? Nothing. Because I know myself, too. I knew that I was scared and desperate, and that my insides were being eaten away. I knew that I was focusing all my mind, all my thoughts, on the plan, the plan, the plan, shutting out all other thoughts. I had nothing to say to Rachel or Tobias. They would do, or not do, whatever they chose. Visor 1 wandered warily through the abandoned campsite. I saw her as Rachel saw her. The enemy. One of the Yurk invaders who had cost her the life of her cousin and her best friend. She was a dozen feet away, two long strides away, from Rachel's Hork-Bajir blades. Rachel stepped into the open. Tobias dropped easily from the tree, landing on T-Rex's feet. My mother, Visor 1, swung her backpack forward and reached inside. The Dracon weapon was in her hand in a flash. I breathed. Rachel was letting her live. For now. Fast as Visor 1 had been, she'd never have reached her weapon had Rachel not wanted her to.
"You,"
Rachel said, stepping forward and speaking in the Hork-Bajir voice.
"Where are Endolite friends?"
"Your friends are fine, Maska Fatan,"
the Visor responded.
"My name. You know my name,"
Rachel said, sounding relieved. Then, a slow Hork-Bajir scowl.
"Endolite friends say password. All must speak password."
I spotted a movement so slight only a hawk would have seen it. Red hair. Only the red hair was hidden now by the camouflage ski mask he'd pulled down over his face. He was in a stand of bushes, close enough to see, not to hear. He had a Dracon beam in his hand, but the way he held it was for self-defense, not attack.
"Freedom now, freedom forever,"
Visor 1 recited with an amused sneer.
"Yes."
Rachel smiled, if you can call what Hork-Bajir do when they're happy smiling.
"You are friend."
"Yes, I am a friend to all free Hork-Bajir."
The Visor could hardly resist masking my mother's face with a grin of glee.
"How is the free colony faring, Maska Fatan?"
"Good, good. All free now. All happy. Much bark to eat,"
Rachel said.
"That's good. Love to hear that the bark is tasty,"
Visor 1 said, dripping contempt.
"Now, conduct me to the colony, as you were instructed to do."
"You change to bird. Fly. Human slow walker."
"Sadly, I am ill,"
Visor 1 said. She made a little cough.
"I am unable to morph at the moment. I will have to travel as a human."
"Human slow,"
Tobias interjected, with true Hork-Bajir dimness.
Yes, yes, it's all a mess,
Visser One agreed testily.
I wish I could morph to bird and fly, but since it's not possible, perhaps you two geniuses could follow the orders you were given.
Underlight Francais, take her to colony,
Tobias said.
Yes,
Rachel agreed.
Up there.
Tobias pointed off the trail. He pointed up toward a high, naked rock summit.
Up there is place. Up there, underlit friends hide colony.
A naked rock peak. The perfect place to stage a battle that would involve forces on the ground and in the air. The perfect place for an anamorph.
Up there?
Visser One said slowly. Her eyes narrowed.
Holograms. Cloaking shields? Yes, of course. Few human interlopers, and camouflage and a force field would stop them. It would work. A small, deep valley, most likely. Invisible from the ground because of the altitude. Easily concealed from the air or space by Andalite countermeasures. The energy drain would be immense, but not unmanageable.
I would have smiled. Yes, Visser One. Just what I'd hoped you'd think. Welcome to the OK Corral, Visser One. Chapter 24. I'd seen enough. Visser One had fallen for it. So far. Rachel and Tobias would handle the rest of the climb. It was unlikely the Visser would try to harm the two Hork-Bajir before she had been shown the way to the colony. Unlikely, but not impossible. She was armed. And I knew what Visser One was. Ruthless. Cruel. That she wore the face of my mother. The woman who had taught me about laughter was a grotesque irony. See, that's ironic, Alanis, I muttered to no one. The ascent would take hours. Tobias and Rachel would have to slip away whenever possible, to demorph and remorph. If Axe was nearby, on station, it would work. He would substitute one Hork-Bajir looking much like the next. But this substitution would be even more perfect than that. Some weeks ago, on a friendly visit with the free Hork-Bajir, Axe had acquired the same Hork-Bajir DNA Rachel was using. Not even a Hork-Bajir would notice any difference. I drifted back down the hill. Back down toward Visser 3 and his controllers. His force was growing. I don't know how they'd gotten there, but a force of Hork-Bajir was moving up the hill from the right flank, swinging through trees and marching along the ground. I counted 30 before I gave up. This would complicate things. I'd hoped to isolate the two Vissers. Visser 1, prepared as we had prepared her with ropes and pitons, would be able to climb. So would Visser 3, who would simply morph something capable. The jagged, naked rocks would delay the human controllers. But Hork-Bajir were strong, and, according to the Hork-Bajir we knew, they came from a planet where life existed entirely within impossibly steep canyons. The Hork-Bajir controllers would be able to keep pace with Rachel and Tobias. Only a limited number of bug fighters could be brought to bear within the limited space, so the balance of power on the ground was important. Too much on Visser 3's side of the equation, and he'd win without suffering much himself. And now, the wild card, we Animorphs, were reduced. 30 Hork-Bajir controllers, and a dozen human controllers, plus Visser 3. It was more than we could handle. Far back down the trail, Red Hair rejoined Visser 3. So now Visser 3 knew that Visser 1 had linked up with two Hork-Bajir. Would he put it all together? Would Visser 3 realize that these were free Hork-Bajir? That Visser 1 was on her way to the free colony? It was getting to be time for me to change morphs. The air was thin, the updrafts non-existent at this altitude. Flying was a chore, and soon I would stand out all too obviously. Where is Axe? I wondered. Rachel? Tobias? Have you seen Axe?
No,
Rachel said. He was supposed to do his best to clear the area, then rejoin us, I said in frustration.
Plan not working out so well, General.
Just get Visser 1 up that mountain.
Face it, Marco. It's a fiasco. A total fiasco. We're dragging this woman up the mountain. For what? It'd be so easy to just give her a shove off the trail.
Shut up, Rachel! I yelled.
Just shut up!
Oh, yeah. You're calm and in control.
Rachel taunted.
Jake's gone. Cassie's gone. And the person running this mission is working on setting up his own mother? This is a waste of time. Marco, just fly off somewhere. Just get out of range so you don't have to see what I'm...
Rachel, that's enough.
Tobias said quietly. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Tobias never messes with Rachel. I think Rachel was shocked too.
Marco has enough load on his shoulders.
Tobias said.
I trust him.
You trust him? You trust him?
You just want Visser One?
Tobias said.
Or do you want them both? We need this woman alive as bait.
All the while, I could see Visser One scrambling over rocks, climbing, hauling herself up by roots and low branches. And Tobias and Rachel were with her, one ahead, one behind.
Yeah, his plans worked out so well so far,
Rachel said. But she fell silent after that. I put her out of my mind. Besides, she was right. The plan was falling apart. I needed reinforcements. Where was Axe? Where was the Andalite?
Hello, Phantomorphs, and thank you for listening to another episode of Audiomorphs, the Animorphs Auditory Experience. As always, this is your host, Daniel. And that's another 3 chapters down. I don't have anything really else to say about this batch. We're right in the thick of things. Hope things work out for Marco, because it's getting a little dodgy. But in the meantime, I have a couple of messages to read, sent in through a variety of means. The first one is through the Tumblr. That's audiomorphscast.tumblr.com. And that's sent in by our friend Willis the Arts, who says, listening to the previous Megamorph, and Tobias' opening monologue about having freedom as a hawk, it's a lot different when you know that Tobias lives under a pseudo-Nazi government. Like, our Tobias usually talks about being free from an awful home life. This Tobias talks about freedom in an almost abstract way. I wonder what that Tobias' life was like before he got replaced with our standard Tobias. Signed, Willis the Aerith. Interesting question, right? Probably not great. Things in a fascist regime tend to not be good for most of the population. Tobias, I think, would still come from a socially... I guess this is the thing, right? Because history's changed so radically, he could be literally anybody, right? He could have been a prodigy child basketball star, and we would have no idea, because of the way when George Washington didn't cross the Delaware, his parents actually, that lineage diverted, and the people who gave birth to him were super talented basketball players, right? But assuming that, what if his life were more or less the same, excusing for the fact that he now lives in, a fascist regime where slavery is allowed, and weird world building that slavery exists, but strictly along the lines of, it seems like, disability and not race, which can't happen with how America is structured. But regardless, we know why that happened. It's because K.A. Applegate didn't want to have to write Cassie being a slave, and I appreciate her for that. So assuming Tobias's life is more or less the same, given some major key differences in the actual country he lives in. He'd come from a lower socioeconomic class, which means that, yeah, life probably still wasn't very good for him. On the other hand, he is white, so maybe, I don't know. Generally, though, I'm betting on bad. I'm betting on bad, even though he was a young white man at one point. Young white boy. I do really love that opening bit by Tobias, though, because I love a little thing where, like, you think maybe you're just kind of cruising along, right? Oh yeah, hey, my name is Tobias, it's a secret, he's doing the thermos, yeah, we've all been here, you're just cruising, right? And then he hits you with, except for Melissa, and you're like, wait a minute, did you mean Rachel? And then he talks about the slaves, and you're like, hello? I think it was a great reveal. I really enjoyed the opening of Megamorphs 3. Thanks for writing, Willis. I also have a message from Brian on the Gmail. That's audiomorphscast@gmail.com, who writes in, "Hey Daniel, thank you for making this podcast and working so hard on it. I loved the series Beyond Words as a kid, but couldn't read it in order and never got to finish it. It really means a lot to be able to read, now. Could you please tell me the song and artist for the intro music on book 17? Thank you." I certainly can. I meant to look that up before I started recording this, and I forgot to do that. So let's just do that live now. Which one was book 17? Book 17, Anna Morphs, would be the Rachel with the back cover, The Underground. Let me just quickly pull that up on Audio Morphscast. That one was Out of My Mind by Monsoon, M-O-N-S-U-N-E. Also, all the opening tracks that I use for all these books, I've compiled into a playlist called Audio Morphs, the OST, on Spotify. I believe I have a link to it in my Twitter description. That Twitter is @AudioMorphs. So you can also try to scroll through like that if you, like Brian, have a question about songs I use. All of them are there. You can find it from there. So thank you for writing in, Brian. And I have one more message from Danny, who writes, "Oh my god, I finally caught up. I started listening to your AudioMorphs podcast almost a year ago, and I've wanted to write in and tell you how much I love it, but told myself I wouldn't until I caught up. I just listened to the newest episode you have out, and now I can finally send this message. I read the Animorphs books when I was little. I'm 24 now, and through a mix of trauma, autism, and ADHD, and mental health issues, I've started having some really bad memory issues. On top of that, I struggle with the ADHD and focusing enough to read without hyper-focusing, to the point where I do nothing else for an entire day. And I work on a horse farm, so that's not an option. I'm allowed to listen to music or books, though. I've been able to relive that part of my childhood while working at my job. And that's all thanks to you. Also, I genuinely love the voices you give characters. So anyway, this whole message is basically me saying thank you so much for making these. You've made my work days like a million times better. P.S. I'm sorry if you got this on your website too. I tried to send it and it doesn't seem to have worked. My internet is absolute garbage, so I can't tell 100%. I will confirm for you, Danny, that it did not come through on the website contact form. So sorry about that. I hope that was on your end and not on my end, because if it's on my end, I have bigger problems, right? But thank you so much for sending in an email. I'm so glad you've enjoyed it. I'm so glad it's helped speed along your workday. I also love a podcast during the workday. Just something easy you can cruise along to and not have to think about too hard while you work. I'm not diagnosed officially, but I'm pretty sure I have ADHD, and I definitely need that extra set of, like, background stimulus to help me focus. So I relate, and I feel you, and I'm glad that this has been good for you. Also, very cool that you work on a horse farm. Cool job. Thank you so much for writing in. That's all the message I got. If you'd like to send in a message, I think I've actually mentioned all the ways, but to recap, that's the Gmail, audiomorphscast@gmail.com, the Tumblr, audiomorphscast.tumblr.com, and my website, theapodcalypse.com. That's theapodcalypse, like apocalypse, but with a D in the middle. And also Twitter, @audiomorphs, and that's where you should check if I'm ever late uploading. That is all I have for you this week. We just cleared, what was the, I'm recording this without my edited chapters in front of me, so I don't actually remember where we were. I'm on like 22. We're over 2/3 of the way through, I think. So we're closing in on the end here. Only 30 chapters this time, so maybe like 3 more episodes, I think. We're almost there. But thank you all for listening, and I'll see you all next week. My name is Daniel, and I believe one day the Andalites will come. Until then, we fight.